Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So I feel like if I keep asking you guys enough weird questions that pop through my head, eventually we'll have created a kind of strange online repository of obscure knowledge. That's kind of where I'm going. I mean, I enjoy listening to every one of the episodes, and I usually record my prompts in batches of like 10 or so, and then I listen to them in other batches when I'm on a walk. So it's kind of a two rituals. But here's one that just popped into my head right now, and I thought it'd be maybe an interesting one for discussion. So we talked about aviation on a few of these episodes, and we talked about spy planes on one that they cruise at these like the U-2 that they cruise at these high altitudes, and we talked about a whole bunch of other things in the air. But if we talk about commercial aviation, the highest cruising altitude tends to be about 40,000 feet, if I'm not mistaken. 30,000 feet, 20,000 feet, those are the typical cruising altitudes when your pilot gets on the PA and says, we've reached our cruising altitude of 30,000 feet. And Concorde used to fly higher than that, if I recall. But there hasn't been a push really in commercial aviation. You presume that they're architecting everything, especially for fuel economy, so carefully that if there was a reason to fly higher, an economic reason, and it was feasible, that people would have done that. So I'm intrigued to know, Herman and Corin, why has the ceiling of commercial aviation seemed to capped out at about 40,000 feet? And speaking of that, I imagine, are there any outliers? Like, are there any planes in regular commercial service today that actually that go higher? And speaking of that concept, I believe that the planes can go higher, right? What's the actual operational limit of the Airbus 380? Just to take one example of a very big plane that flies high, what can it go up to? And are there any occasions where that 40,000 limit can be breached? Of course, we're talking about commercial aviation and big planes like the Airbus 380. We're going to talk about flight plans and ATC and all the rest of it. None of it is really left to chance. It's all very planned and regimented. So Herman and Corin, why is it that commercial aviation, we don't really hear that we're cruising at 60,000 feet? Is there a plan to make planes that will push the envelope higher? And that's really it. Over to you guys.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I'm Corn, and I'm sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. It is a beautiful day to talk about things that fly very, very high in the sky.
It really is. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note earlier today that got us both digging through our old aviation manuals. He was asking about cruising altitudes. Specifically, why does it feel like commercial aviation has just stopped at 40,000 feet?
It is a great question because it feels like a plateau, right? We had this rapid climb in technology from the Wright brothers to the first jets, and then we hit the 1960s and 70s and just kind of stayed there. Aside from the Concorde, which was always the exception, we have been stuck in that 30,000 to 42,000 foot band for decades.
Exactly. Daniel was wondering if it is just fuel economy or if there is something more fundamental keeping us down. And he also wanted to know about the outliers. Like, what is the actual limit for something like the massive Airbus A380?
Well, I think to understand the ceiling, we have to understand the sweet spot. Aviation is always a trade-off between physics, economics, and safety. If you go higher, the air is thinner, which means less drag. Less drag means you can go faster with less fuel. That sounds like a win-win, right?
On paper, yeah. If I am an airline executive, I want to fly as high as possible to save on that massive fuel bill. But clearly there is a point of diminishing returns.
There is a very literal point of diminishing returns called the coffin corner. I love that name, even though it sounds terrifying. In aerodynamics, it is technically known as the aerodynamic ceiling. As you go higher, the air gets thinner. To stay in the air, you have to fly faster to generate enough lift. But as you fly faster, you get closer to the speed of sound.
Right. And most commercial airliners are not designed to go supersonic. Their wings are optimized for subsonic flight.
Exactly. So you have a minimum speed you must maintain to keep from stalling because the air is so thin. But as you go higher, the speed of sound actually decreases because the air is colder. Eventually, your stall speed and your maximum speed, the speed where you start hitting Mach effects that could tear the plane apart, meet at a single point. That is the coffin corner. If you go any higher, you literally have no margin for error. If you slow down, you stall. If you speed up, you hit structural limits.
So for a standard Boeing 737 or Airbus A320, that corner starts getting uncomfortably close once you pass 40,000 feet. But what about the engines themselves? I mean, don't they also struggle when the air gets that thin?
They do. Modern commercial jets use high-bypass turbofans. These engines are incredible pieces of engineering, but they need a lot of air. They work by moving a massive volume of air around the engine core. When you get up to 45,000 or 50,000 feet, there just isn't enough oxygen or enough air density for those big fans to work efficiently. You would need much larger, much heavier engines to get the same thrust, which then ruins your fuel economy.
So it is a double whammy. You lose lift and you lose engine efficiency. But I remember we talked about the U-2 spy plane back in another episode. That thing cruises at over 70,000 feet. How does it manage that if the physics are so punishing?
The U-2 is basically a jet-powered glider. It has massive long wings to catch every bit of lift possible in that thin air. But it is notoriously difficult to fly at that altitude. The pilots used to talk about having only a 5-knot window between stalling and overspeeding. That is fine for a military pilot in a specialized suit, but you cannot run a commercial airline with 300 passengers on board with a 5-knot margin of error. One little gust of wind or a slight pilot error, and you are in a high-altitude stall.
That makes total sense. We have to prioritize safety and stability over the marginal fuel gains of going 10,000 feet higher. But Daniel also asked about the outliers. Are there any commercial planes today that actually push past that 40,000-foot ceiling regularly?
There are, but they aren't the big ones you usually fly on. Business jets are the real high flyers of the commercial world. If you look at something like a Gulfstream G650 or the new Bombardier Global 8000, which just entered full service recently, those planes have a service ceiling of 51,000 feet.
51,000? That is significantly higher than a standard flight from London to New York. Why do the small jets get to go that high?
It is partly because they have a much higher power-to-weight ratio. They are small, light, and have very powerful engines for their size. But the real reason is traffic. The 30,000 to 40,000 foot range is crowded. It is like the highway at rush hour. If you can fly at 50,000 feet, you have the whole sky to yourself. You can take more direct routes. You don't have to deal with the wake turbulence of other planes, and you are far above almost all weather.
I imagine the passengers paying for a Gulfstream also appreciate the smoother ride. But let's talk about the big boy Daniel mentioned, the Airbus A380. It is the largest passenger plane ever built. What is its actual limit?
The official service ceiling for the Airbus A380 is 43,100 feet. Most of the time, they cruise between 35,000 and 41,000 feet.
Why 43,100? That seems like such a specific number.
It usually comes down to the pressurization limits of the fuselage and emergency safety protocols. This is a huge factor that people often forget. The higher you go, the greater the pressure difference between the inside of the cabin and the outside air. To keep passengers comfortable at 43,000 feet, the plane's structure has to be incredibly strong to keep from literally popping like a balloon. Also, if the cabin decompresses at that height, the emergency oxygen systems for passengers. Those little masks that drop down actually struggle to provide enough oxygen because they rely on mixing a bit of outside air in. Above 43,000 feet, the air is just too thin for those systems to work safely for 300 people.
And that strength adds weight.
Exactly. If you wanted to certify the A380 to fly at 50,000 feet, you would have to reinforce the entire fuselage. That would make the plane so heavy that it wouldn't be able to carry enough fuel or passengers to be profitable. It is all a circle of engineering compromises.
It is interesting because we discussed the Israeli logistics paradox in episode 289 about how weight and efficiency dictate everything in shipping. It is the same here, just in three dimensions. Every pound of aluminum you add to strengthen the cabin against high altitude pressure is a pound of cargo you can't carry.
Precisely. And there is another safety factor called the time of useful consciousness. If you are at 40,000 feet and the cabin suddenly loses pressure, you have about 15 to 30 seconds to get your oxygen mask on before you pass out. If you are at 50,000 feet, that time drops to maybe 9 or 10 seconds. It is almost instantaneous. For a commercial airliner with hundreds of people, the Federal Aviation Administration and other regulators are very wary of pushing those limits.
Wow, 10 seconds. That really puts the safety demonstrations into perspective. But let's look at the history for a second. Daniel mentioned the Concorde. That was the big outlier. It used to fly at 60,000 feet, right?
It did. 60,000 feet is breathtaking. At that height, you can actually see the curvature of the Earth and the sky above you starts to turn a very dark, deep, navy blue, almost black. The Concorde could do that because it was supersonic. It didn't rely on high bypass fans, it used turbojets with afterburners. It was basically a fighter jet with a luxury cabin.
But it was also a fuel hog. I mean, that is ultimately why it failed, right? The economics just didn't work.
That and the noise. But the Concorde also faced a unique problem at 60,000 feet, cosmic radiation and ozone. The higher you go, the less atmosphere there is to protect you from solar radiation. Concorde actually had a radiation meter on the flight deck. If a solar flare happened, they would sometimes have to descend to lower altitudes to protect the passengers.
I never thought about that. So there is a literal health limit to how high we should be flying regularly.
There is. Even at 35,000 feet, frequent flyers and flight crews receive more radiation than the general population. If we started cruising at 60,000 feet regularly, we would have to rethink the shielding on planes, which, again, adds more weight.
So, we have the coffin corner, engine efficiency, structural weight, safety margins for depressurization, and radiation. It sounds like 40,000 feet isn't just a random number. It is a very hard physical and economic wall.
It really is. It is the sweet spot where the air is thin enough to be efficient, but thick enough to support the wings and feed the engines, while the pressure isn't so high that the plane needs to be built like a tank.
But Daniel also asked about the future. Are there plans to push this envelope? I've been reading about these new supersonic startups like Boom Overture. Are they going to go higher?
They have to. If you are going to fly supersonic, you want to be in the thinnest air possible to minimize the sonic boom and the heat from friction. Boom Overture is aiming for a cruising altitude of about 60,000 feet, very similar to the Concorde. They have been making great progress with their XB-1 demonstrator flights over the last couple of years, proving that modern materials can handle those stresses better than the tech from the 70s.
How are they planning to solve the fuel efficiency problem that killed the Concorde?
Better materials and much better engines. We have made huge leaps in carbon fiber composites since the 1970s. A lighter plane needs less lift, which means it can fly higher more easily. And modern computer modeling allows them to shape the wings and the fuselage to handle those high-altitude Mach effects much more efficiently.
It is funny. We touched on aviation security and the future of flight in episode 273. It seems like we keep coming back to this idea that the next big leap isn't just about speed, but about where in the sky we are allowed to be.
Right. And there's also the hypersonic dream. There are companies and military projects looking at flying at Mach 5 or higher. To do that, you are looking at altitudes of nearly 100,000 feet. At that point, you aren't even really an airplane anymore. You are a suborbital vehicle. You are skipping along the top of the atmosphere.
That feels like a completely different category. You would probably need rocket engines or scramjets for that, right?
Exactly. A scramjet, or supersonic combustion ramjet, only works at extremely high speeds and very high altitudes. But that is years, maybe decades away from being a commercial reality. For the average traveler, for the next 20 years, 40,000 feet is likely where we are going to stay.
It is a bit disappointing in a way, isn't it? We have all this technology, but we are limited by the density of the air and the strength of aluminum.
I don't know if I find it disappointing. I think it is actually kind of beautiful. It is a perfect example of humanity finding the exact balance point with nature. We found the one slice of the atmosphere where we can move hundreds of people at 800 kilometers per hour safely and affordably.
That is a very Herman Poppleberry way of looking at it, turning a technical limitation into a poetic balance.
I try, but think about it. If we flew lower, we would be in the weather all the time. The turbulence would be constant and the fuel cost would be double. If we flew higher, the risks of depressurization and radiation would make tickets 10 times more expensive. We are living in the golden age of the troposphere.
Speaking of weather, I wanted to ask about the outliers in the other direction. Are there any commercial reasons to fly lower? I know some short-haul flights stay around 20,000 feet.
Yeah, that is usually just because the flight is too short to make the climb worth it. It takes a huge amount of energy to push a 100-ton plane up to 40,000 feet. If you were just flying from Jerusalem to Eilat or from New York to Washington, D.C., you would spend the entire flight climbing and then immediately have to descend. It is more efficient to just stay in the thicker air for 30 minutes.
That makes sense. It is like a car. You don't shift into fifth gear if you are just driving two blocks to the grocery store.
Exactly. But you know, there is one more outlier we should mention. There is a phenomenon called step climbing. Have you ever been on a long-haul flight, maybe 10 hours in, and you feel the engines rev up and the plane climb for a few minutes?
Yeah, I always assumed we were just avoiding some turbulence.
Sometimes that is it, but often it is because the plane has burned off so much fuel that it is now significantly lighter than it was at takeoff. Because it is lighter, its optimal altitude has shifted. The wings can now support the plane in thinner air. So the pilots ask air traffic control for permission to climb from 34,000 to 38,000 feet. It is a way of chasing that sweet spot as the weight of the plane changes.
That is fascinating. So the ceiling isn't even a fixed number for a single flight. It is a moving target based on how much fuel is left in the tanks.
Precisely. For an Airbus A380, which can carry over 250,000 liters of fuel, the difference in weight between takeoff and landing is massive. It is like the weight of a whole other airplane has disappeared. So they might start the flight at 30,000 feet because they are too heavy to go higher and end the flight at 41,000 feet.
So Daniel's question about the limit of the A380 is actually two different answers. There is the structural limit, which is that 43,000 feet we talked about. But there is also a performance limit that changes every hour of the flight.
Right? If you tried to take a fully loaded A380 to 40,000 feet right after takeoff, you might actually stall it. It just doesn't have the lift yet.
This really highlights why pilots have to be so well trained. It isn't just about steering. It is about managing this incredibly complex equation of weight, air density, and engine power in real time.
And doing it while keeping 300 people asleep in the back. It is a miracle of modern coordination.
It really is. You know, we have covered a lot of ground here, from the coffin corner to the radiation at 60,000 feet. I think the big takeaway for me is that 40,000 feet isn't a failure of imagination. It is a victory of optimization.
I love that. A victory of optimization. We have carved out our little niche in the sky.
Before we wrap up this part of the discussion, I want to talk about the environmental side of this. We talked about fuel economy, but does altitude affect the actual impact of the emissions? I have heard that contrails and nitrogen oxides behave differently depending on how high you are.
Oh, that is a huge topic right now. Yes, it does. Contrails, those white lines you see behind planes, are essentially artificial clouds. At certain altitudes and humidity levels, they can trap heat in the atmosphere, contributing to global warming. There is actually research being done right now. Google and American Airlines have been testing this to see if we can reduce the climate impact of aviation by slightly changing altitudes to avoid the layers of the atmosphere where contrails form.
So we might actually start flying lower or higher, not for fuel, but for the planet.
Exactly. Sometimes flying 2,000 feet lower might use 1% more fuel, but it could reduce the warming effect of the flight by 50% because it prevents a persistent contrail from forming. It is a whole new layer of the altitude equation that we are just beginning to understand in 26.
That is a great point. It adds a whole new dimension to the discussion. It isn't just about the plane. It is about the atmosphere itself.
it always is. The atmosphere isn't just empty space. It is a fluid, a shield, and a very delicate chemical system.
Well, I think we have given Daniel a lot to chew on. From the physics of the coffin corner to the future of supersonic travel and the environmental impact of contrails.
It was a great prompt. I always love an excuse to talk about the A380. It is a tragedy that they stopped making them, but I am glad some of them are still in the air pushing right up against that 43,100-foot ceiling.
Yeah, it is a magnificent machine. And hey, for everyone listening, if you've been enjoying our deep dives into these weird prompts, please take a second to leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It really helps other curious people find the show.
It genuinely does. We see every one of them and we really appreciate it.
You can also find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We have the full archive there, including the episodes we mentioned today, like the one on the Israeli logistics paradox and aviation security. There is also a contact form if you want to be like Daniel and send us a question that has been rattling around in your head.
Please do. No topic is too obscure for us. We live for the rabbit holes.
Definitely. Well, I think that is it for today. Thanks for joining us in our living room in Jerusalem.
This has been My Weird Prompts.
Until next time, keep asking the weird questions.
And keep looking up, though maybe not past 40,000 feet unless you are in a Gulf Stream.
Fair point. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.